Hello and welcome to today's episode of The Quad Shot, where we help you down and digest the day's most pertinent cancer news. It's March 16, 2020. Welcome to The Quadcast. Let's dive in. First up, COVID-19. While we here at The Quad Shot are by no means public health or infectious disease experts, there's been an unfortunate lack of information on a national level to guide radiation oncologists, heck, even the American people, on how to act when COVID-19 hits their community. Here are some thoughts on how to specifically adapt the very non-specific COVID-19 recommendations to radiation oncology practices. It can be framed in three phases. First, there may be some practices in communities that haven't had any cases of COVID-19. For them, the focus is vigilant screening and hygiene. In a second phase, COVID-19 is in your community, but it hasn't affected a patient or staff member at your center. So what do you do in this phase? Well, first let's look at some facts. The median incubation time is 4 days, with an interquartile range from 2 to 7 days. The main symptoms are fever and cough. Most cases have radiographic evidence of pneumonia, if you look for it, and transmission is usually from symptomatic patients, but it can come from asymptomatic patients or in people who haven't yet developed symptoms, which, yes, means you could easily be in phase 3 without actually knowing it. Viral load is also exceedingly high early in convalescence. These latter points are very important for a radiation oncology clinic where we have a mix of relatively young, healthy people as well as vulnerable patients at high risk of developing severe disease. From a staffing standpoint, many are moving to split staffing and remote work whenever feasible, which for us oftentimes means treatment planning. The goal here is to avoid a situation with widespread exposure where the entire therapy or nursing staff has to self-quarantine. In the case of dramatic understaffing, many centers are creating a triage structure for worst-case scenarios where potentially curative patients remain on treatment, followed by urgent palliative cases, and then non-urgent palliation. Lastly, what do you do if you're in phase 3, if your clinic has an infected patient? Some are considering a similar split schedule where infected or exposed patients who require treatment all come in during a specific block of time, typically the end of the day, with minimal staff to reduce exposure. This could help staff take extra precautions during that time, lower the risk of spread to unaffected patients, and allow for a time of intensive decontamination of treatment rooms. The bottom line is, whether you are in a big or a small practice, sit down today with your leadership to devise an emergency preparedness plan to maximize your patients' chances of safely completing their radiation treatments. New England Journal, 2020. Up next, atypical aggressiveness. So what is the standard approach to treating atypical teratoid rhabdoid tumors, or ATRT? Well, remember, ATRTs are primary CNS tumors that occur in young children. They are rare, even in the pediatric world, and highly aggressive with poor outcomes and no clear consensus on effective treatment. ACNS-0333 is the first cooperative group trial to establish a standard approach for ATRT, and it includes pretty much everything but the kitchen sink. 65 patients underwent resection followed by induction chemotherapy, which included 2 cycles of vincristine, methotrexate, etoposide, cyclophosphamide, and cisplatin, plus or minus a second look surgery, and then high-dose chemotherapy of 3 cycles of carboplatin and thiotepa with stem cell rescue. patients 6 months or older with infratentorial tumors and 12 months or older with supratentorial tumors received involved field radiation after induction chemo and before consolidation. Even younger patients received delayed radiation given at the end. The dose was 50.4 gray for kids less than 3 years old and 54 gray for all others. At 4 years, event-free survival was 37%, which is significantly better than historical controls, and overall survival was 43%. ACNS-0333 specifically demonstrates the importance of methotrexate, radiation therapy, and high-dose chemotherapy. Of note, protocol amendments were necessary to reduce treatment toxicity, as treatment-related deaths were slightly higher than anticipated at 6%. The bottom line is, ACNS-0333 establishes the standard treatment regimen for ATRT on which to build future regimens with less toxicity, targeted pathways, and improved survival outcomes. Thanks to Reddy et al., JCO, 2020. Up next, measure what matters. Back at ASTRO 2019, we heard from a phase 2b trial comparing proton beam therapy and intensity modulated radiation therapy for unresectable esophageal cancer. Here, we have the full publication in JCO 2020 by Lin et al. The 145 patients randomized, which ended up being 107 that were evaluated, had either resectable or potentially resectable stage 2 to 3 esophageal cancer with either squamous or adenocarcinoma histology located anywhere from the cervical esophagus to the gastric cardia. Both radiation arms received fairly standard 50.4 gray with chemotherapy. There were two endpoints, progression-free survival and total toxicity burden, also known as TTB. TTB is a relatively new endpoint for us. It's a composite measure of all the toxicities experienced by a patient during a course of treatment. Importantly, it assigns severity weights to the same grades of different complications. Following chemoradiation, just over half of patients in each arm went for surgery. Disease outcomes were similar with a nearly identical 30% complete response rate and 44.5% 3-year progression-free survival. When it came to total toxicity burden, though, IMRT had 2.3 times higher total toxicity burden than proton beam therapy. In particular, the higher total toxicity burden was felt to be driven largely by the nearly 8 times higher post-op complication rate with IMRT. However, that large difference in total toxicity burden did not translate into a difference in patient-reported quality of life. Nevertheless, the cardiopulmonary effects of thoracic radiation and their potential detriment to toxicity and survival outcomes should not be underestimated. But we also need to learn more about the meaning and validity of total toxicity burden before deciding if it's a slam dunk for protons. The bottom line is, proton-based chemoradiation for locally advanced esophageal cancer reduces the cumulative burden of toxicity and postoperative complications as compared to IMRT, but without a significant improvement in survival outcomes or quality of life. Up next, carry on. Should you worry about an increased risk of second malignancy in women with germline BRCA mutations receiving breast radiation? Their cells have only one copy of BRCA, which plays an important role in DNA repair. So some wonder if those cells are more susceptible to DNA damage that could result in later cancer. In this cohort, published in the Red Journal 2020 by Schlosser et al., 230 BRCA mutation carriers were treated with breast radiation over a 20-year period. six developed secondary malignancies, one of which was technically in the radiation treatment field, a papillary thyroid carcinoma diagnosed 17 years after radiation. In other words, there were no infield sarcoma or skin cancers over more than 3,000 person years. The bottom line is, the incidence of infield secondary malignancy among BRCA mutation carriers receiving breast radiation is 0.32 per 1,000 person years. Basically, the risk is small and it's no greater than in other populations. Up next, informed. BRCA mutation triple negative breast cancers are sensitive to platinum agents. The randomized phase 2 INFORM trial sought to detect an improvement in pathologic complete response rate with neoadjuvant cisplatin compared to standard doxorubicin cyclophosphamide chemotherapy for HER2-negative disease. Over 100 BRCA mutation carriers with stage 1 to 3 breast cancer, including 45% that were node positive, were enrolled. The pathologic complete response rate was not significantly better, not even close. With cisplatin, it was 18%. With AC, it was 26%. Looking at a slightly less stringent measure of low residual tumor burden, standard AC still won out. This held true when looking at just triple negative breast cancer or the ER positive cohort. The bottom line is, AC remains the backbone of systemic therapy for HER2-negative breast cancer, even among BRCA carriers, thanks to Tung, JCO, 2020. Up next, de-escalating cognition. This secondary analysis of cognitive function among women receiving chemo plus endocrine therapy versus endocrine therapy alone on TAILOR-X demonstrates a small, statistically, but not clinically, significant greater decline with combined therapy than with endocrine therapy alone, thanks to a JCO 2020 publication by Wagner et al. Interestingly, there was no difference between arms among premenopausal women, primarily because of the greater decline seen among those receiving endocrine monotherapy, which continued the descent up to the final time point of 36 months. This is yet again more evidence that long-term endocrine therapy may not be as innocuous as we think. Up next, good to the last drop. Tumor genetic analysis is a standard of care in the management of gastrointestinal stromal tumors, or GISTs. And what's better than a throat scope and a biopsy? Well, a simple finger prick. This retrospective analysis, published in JCO 2020 by Arshad, evaluated 243 patients with GIST undergoing serum circulating tumor DNA sequencing in addition to standard tissue sequencing, and it demonstrated a positive predictive value of 100% for the serum test to detect pathogenic mutations. Finally, speaking level. Our consults may need as much work as our consent forms. This cross-sectional study, published in JAMA Network Open by Almaki et al., reports that less than 15% of patients had an understanding of their chemotherapy plan that was concordant with their oncologist. This concludes today's episode of The Quad Shot. If you like what you've heard, please consider giving us a 5-star rating and subscribing to our podcast. Also, check out our website at www.quadshotnews.com and subscribe to our newsletter. We'll catch you next time.